can have a beautiful policy vision, but unless you have those tangible steps to make that a reality, it's a bit of a pipe dream.
Are you interested in policymaking for sustainability? What do you think about the UN Sustainable Development Goals? How can we break the silos for systems to talk to each other? Stay tuned for answers from Alison Scotland.
What is the future for cities? Do you want to learn more about them? Do you want to know how others think about them? Do you want to be part of the conversation? Then this is the right place.
Welcome to What is the Future for Cities podcast. Today, I will interview Alison Scotland, Executive Director at Australian Sustainable Built Environment Council. We will talk about her vision for the future of cities, advising policymaking, optimism as a choice, getting rid of policies, the time being right to change, and many more. So let's start with a proper introduction. Alison Scotland is the Executive Director of the Australian Sustainable Built Environment Council, also known as ASBEC, a body of peak organizations committed to a vision of more sustainable, productive, and resilient buildings, communities, and cities. Her passion and expertise lie in collaborating with industry, government, and third sector leaders to develop national policy and technical solutions that enhance the built environment. Alison's experience encompasses public, private, and non-profit organizations, including Standards Australia, Sydney Water, and New South Wales Health. Her work has seen her serve on several national policy and technical committees for the built environment. She is a board member for Partner Housing Australasia and currently sits on a number of committees, including the Residential Energy Efficiency Disclosure Initiative Governance Forum, New South Wales Government Clean Technology Technical Review Committee, and the National Urban Policy Forum. Alison has a Bachelor of Science, Environment and Communications, and a Master of Business Administration. And with that, Alison, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for your time. I highly appreciate your appearance on the podcast. Let's jump right in. What does the future of cities mean to you?
I think cities have such a great opportunity to really spearhead innovation in policy. My particular interest, of course, is in sustainability. And I think now more than ever, there's such an amazing opportunity to really test all of those inclusive policy-based solutions, especially as we know that the proportion of people living in urban areas is going to grow significantly by 2050. So it's really important that we get cities right. For me, it's about integrating green, water-sensitive opportunities, tackling all of the systemic issues in there that increase sort of poverty and inequity. We've got such a great opportunity through city-based policy to tackle those key issues, to make cities vibrant, make them resilient, make them diverse, make them healthy and thriving. And that's what I love about the opportunity with cities.
Before we move on, what does the city mean to you? Because the city entails a lot based on your answer. What does the city mean to you?
That's really interesting because it's a live conversation currently. For the benefit of our listeners, I represent ASBEC, the Australian Sustainable Built Environment Council, on the National Urban Policy Forum, which reports in to Minister Catherine King. And the conversation about cities is really interesting because obviously you need to have an indication of measurement. And previously it's been a population thing, but there's so much more to it, especially when you're thinking about policy that affects a collection of people living together. You almost need to think about it in terms of themes. Is it a hub type of concept? So I think we are moving beyond just that single indicator of population and more along concepts of, okay, this is a community. What needs to exist in this community for it to be fairly self-sufficient, but not only that, be connected to other hubs around it? especially for Australia, we have our definition of city and we have our capital cities and all the other major hubs. But thinking about the regions and the opportunities that exist in the regions to form those types of hubs and perform the functions for the areas around those hubs, I think that's really important. So from a city point of view, I think that definition probably needs to be a little bit looser, because those concepts and the opportunities for cities can apply to more than just the traditional ones that we're thinking of.
How do we differentiate between the city and the region? What is the limit? Is there a limit? How do you differentiate between the city and the region?
I suppose maybe thinking of it in the hub, it's the connectivity. So potentially when you're talking about region, it would be the area around the hub that would be either going into the hub area for their relevant services or lifestyle or even work. And the region around it is in the vicinity, people traveling in. So for me, I think a bit of a transport way of thinking about it. Differentiating between a city and a region, it's hard because I think we'd like to think of it as a transport way, but knowing that we might look to diversifying, say, where we work and how we work, that transport issue comes into play, because if someone is in the region of one hub but needs to travel a long way to go to another hub or city, then that presents us with some challenges around access and location and opportunities and traffic issues as well. And from a sustainability point of view, you need to encourage public transport infrastructure that facilitates that. But if you have a hub or a city that's servicing its region, but not providing what the population around it needs, you're going to get issues around travel between one location and another. So I think that's one type of differentiation that I see. But there's so many other ways you can think about it. In Australia, I think you can have cities in the regions that we have traditionally thought of outside the capital cities. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I know we have policy for the region, but I think it needs to be really integrated into our national urban policy that we are in the process of developing. So that's one of the key themes that I believe this national urban policy will try to distinguish. How does urban policy work with and blend with what's needed in the regions? Because you can have the regions that do have urban environments in there. So I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
And it's even murkier when you include the hinterlands,
yes,
the lands which support the city, because then if we, for example, talk about waste, the region expands towards where the waste goes. And that's usually not near the city or the region. So there was, a research about what is Melbourne's footprint. Mm-hmm. If we count everything into Melbourne, then the footprint expands to India, because that's where the waste goes.
And not only that, even coming in. So food security, the needs of the city drawing on a very much broader footprint, as you mean. So coming in and leaving the city.
What does sustainability mean to you?
Goodness me, it's such a complex term, isn't it? There's a few definitions that I have heard over the years and that really speak to me. One of them is intergenerational equity. Anything that you're doing needs to not have an impact on future generations. And our current culture, our current way of life absolutely takes from the natural environment, takes our natural resources and doesn't give back. It doesn't leave the world a better place for the future generations. So for me, I think that's a nice, simple way of describing sustainability, and that can be applied to a whole different range of themes. Sustainability in the built environment is very much that as well. It comprises a whole range of different concepts. From an ASBEC point of view, we see the UN Sustainable Development Goals as being really integral to how we need to look at policy in the built environment. that obviously also does constitute emissions reduction. So I know that's a big focus for us at the moment and it's something we need to get right. But noting that emissions reduction and reducing our carbon footprint is just one of the aspects of sustainability. You need to think about environment. You need to think about nature. You need to think about social. You need to think about health and community. It's so much more than just reducing our emissions.
So sustainability means intergenerational equity. How do you define equity then?
That's another loaded term, isn't it? Because it's not equality. And that's a big thing. So I'm very focused on the idea that the developed nations culture is very much focused on hierarchy and exacerbate the split between the haves and have-nots. So for me, it's really important to consider that anything we do needs to consider those that are less fortunate than us. It needs to ensure that, say, from a policy point of view, we are not putting in place policies that will have unintended consequences for those that are less fortunate, that can't afford the basics. So I think that we always talk about the clean energy transition and that needing to be a just transition. That's what we mean. You need to take everyone with you and you need to develop policy that includes everyone and doesn't just favor those that can afford it.
When we talk about equity and equality, we mix up things like equal outcomes and equal opportunities. Do you connect these expressions to either of these terms?
I agree. If you think about equal opportunities, are they really equal? I'm quite visual and I love there's a visual description about what equality is versus what equity is. And it's a tall person reaching for something and another person reaching for it. And that's equal. That's an equal advantage. But really, the short person is not going to reach that. Speaking as a short person really speaks to me. But equity is obviously having the short person on a platform so that they are the same height as the tall person. That's equity. And so the visual representation of the fact that those with advantage need less help than those that are disadvantaged. And I think that's really important to consider. And I think a lot of our policies don't have those measures in place. What I will say is we're doing a really great job at recognizing that now. And even in the energy efficiency space and energy performance of building space, there's some fabulous work happening across both the national government and the state and territory governments around really addressing that inequality. And recent announcements in relation to support and funding for social and community housing, that's really tackling the equity take rather than the equal take. So I think that's really important. It's a great opportunity as well.
Your visual description is so interesting because there can be also a third picture when the things which are on the highest shelves, the highest shelf is lowered, which means that nobody needs any help. Everybody can access it. I also like this visual representation when it's not reaching for a shelf, but looking over a fence. And yes, the first two pictures have solid fence. And the third is just a rail.
A fence you can look through.
Yes.
Exactly.
We could also think about not just helping those, but creating systems which already are not outside of reach of anybody.
And that's the beauty of innovation. We talked at the very beginning about cities as that opportunity to really embed innovation. And that's innovation in policy, taking our existing systems of government and policy development and really throwing them on their head. Because if you think about all the different levels of government that we have, you have your national government, you have your state territory government, and all of the different agencies within those. And then you have all of our hundreds of local governments. There's so much fragmentation to really get the change and the urgent change that we need in so many different areas. You really need to rethink the way you develop policy and how you really get that traction across all those levels at once in an effective and productive way. Just a little challenge there.
Just a very small. Okay. Which brings me to another question. What does innovation mean to you? And you described in policy that it means throwing everything on its head and investigating how it could work in a different way. What is innovation?
So many things. I think innovation is taking those amazing ideas and helping them achieve scalability, give everyone access to them. And I have the benefit of a background in standards for my sins. And I really saw that as a really important function. So you can have a fantastic idea, but if the world is not able to access the benefits of that idea, then it's not innovative. What I love about ASBEC is that we take those ideas, we take the amazing things that the leaders are doing, and we try to say, okay, what's it going to take to apply this at scale? Because for me, that's innovation. And that could be an invention, or it could be an idea of applying some kind of policy and provoking change. So it doesn't have to be a trinket or a widget. It could be a way of doing things. So I see innovation in all of those areas.
It's a very surprising way of thinking about innovation, because as I understood, it's not about the thing itself. It's how the thing is applied to anything else.
Agreed.
Let's go back to the UN Sustainable Development Goals, also known as SDGs. As a Future of Cities researcher, I have a huge, okay, not huge, but kind of problem with the UN SDGs, that from the 17 goals, only one mentions cities, even though we know that people are living in cities. If we think about cities in a more sustainable way, then we could solve many of the other goals. How do you think about this? Do you think that this is a shortcoming of the development goals? Please help me understand how this is a better way of setting goals for individual aspects of the city instead of thinking it through as a holistic solution.
I think that it's always the result of trying to categorize. So you're going to get silos no matter what you do. I don't fault the SDGs in that way because, of course, they have to put initiatives in categories. I think it's more about applying systems thinking to the categories. Potentially, there's room for improvement in that way. We have exactly the same challenges in ASBEC, where we've got so many different strategic priorities that we're trying to leverage and embed in Australian policy at all levels of government. Take electrification and removing fossil fuels in our built environment. That covers a whole range of different aspects and crosses over a whole range of different themes and different processes and different regulatory initiatives, buildings versus planning. But you have to categorize it. You have to pop it in a slot. So you just need a different way of applying the mission. And I know you've got the sustainable cities and communities, but the undercurrent is if you're dealing with those SDGs, you need to actually look at the forest rather than focusing on the tree. As policymakers and policy developers, we always need to stand back and understand, okay, at a high level, what is it that we need to achieve? So when I'm creating sustainable city policy, I need to think about good health and well-being. I need to think about quality education. I need to think about clean water and sanitation. That's just a no-brainer. But reminding people that can get so focused on what they're doing, reminding them of the broader objectives, I think that's really important. All the Venn diagrams where things overlap. I just think it's the disadvantage of having to categorize.
And I'm speaking very easily from hindsight. So I appreciate that it's a very hard thing to categorize everything in.
So even take circular economy, something that every government, every level of government is trying to tackle. And you can have all these sort of functional policies that try to get change happening, but often it's a cultural shift. So you need to think about people's behaviors and what they're inclined to do, just as much as you're thinking about supply chains and where things are coming from and providing the infrastructure to help make it a no-brainer to do. And that's really hard. And it requires, again, if you think about it, it's a systems level way of making something happen. And from an ASBEC point of view, we're very much focused on making it happen. You can have a beautiful policy vision, but unless you have those tangible steps to make that a reality, it's a bit of a pipe dream. So we're not the future visionary people. We've got some amazing leaders in that space that we can take inspiration from. But for us, we're really concerned with, okay, how do we get this happening across Australia? How do we make it a reality? And sometimes it's hard. It's baby steps.
Who creates the policy?
Everyone. That's the main answer. And I feel honored to have a role of bringing together a lot of those components of everyone to help develop policy. From an ASBEC point of view, our members are all peak bodies in the Australian built environment. So it's not people that are members of ASBEC, it's the peak bodies themselves. We also have, as part of the ASBEC membership, our beautiful government observers and partners who we can have conversations with. We also have academia in the room. And then by industry, you're talking sort of professional organizations, you've got industry organizations, you have not-for-profits and NGOs. It's a wonderful mix of what industry constitutes. We get together and we've all got different approaches, different opinions, but we get together and go, okay, what do we agree on? And what we agree on, we leverage that because it's very powerful when a whole bunch of very different organizations agree on something. And we use that to chat with our government partners and government observers to say, okay, this is what we've spoken about in relation to this issue. We all agree that this should happen. Let us help you make that happen. And then from a government perspective, they've got some really wonderfully tried and tested ways of consulting with the broader community about those ideas. So from an ASBEC point of view, we're very much in the brainstorm stage. This is where we're thinking we need to head based on this vision. We work with government to help articulate that with the view that government processes then take that consultation broader and any person wishing to can comment on policy and can comment on changes, whether it's the building code, whether it's energy efficiency, whether it's planning, whatever the case. The fact that policy is open for people to comment on is a wonderful thing. And that's what I love about the way that Australia works.
When a policy is in the making, you are helping the government with your professional advice, with the bodies you are working with and trying to help the government to establish a good policy. What is the government's role?
The government's role is working towards a vision, but also taking in the needs of the community in realizing that vision. And they have a responsibility because they are using taxpayer funding to fund these initiatives. So they need to be spending it in areas that are important for the community. So that constant dialogue with the community is really necessary. The challenges with government is, and we see it again at all levels of government, sometimes the politicization of government policy can get in the way of the long-term vision. So sometimes policy can be very short term based on election cycles. And I think the challenge for government and bureaucrats is to get the right balance between that long term vision. And that's particularly important with cities, that long term vision. Obviously, there's going to be what the belief is in the zeitgeist of the day. But it's so important to have the eyes on what the future of cities should be when creating policy around cities and not be completely carried away with the politics of the day.
Why is vision important?
If you don't know where you're heading, you could end up in completely different places. And if you think about that from a global perspective as well, it's easy for Australia to be so focused on what Australia is and what Australia needs. But noting that we are taking part in a global economy with things that happen outside our country massively influencing our quality of life and our needs, we need to be aware of that. So for me, the vision is, again, understanding the forest and not just focusing on the tree.
I have had interviewers talking about how it's a very intricate balance to find not just the first, but the second and third order consequences of a decision. How do you advise, or how do you find these other consequences, not just the immediate ones, when you are advising government? Can these additional benefits or disadvantages used as a leverage when you are advising governments?
I think all of those processes need to be taken into consideration. That's why sometimes I describe what we do as really boring and pragmatic, because the vision is always so inspiring and wonderful, but there's so many little things that need to happen to help realize that vision. And part of those little things are understanding the consequences of every single decision or every single decision option. So ASBEC conducts a lot of that sort of practical, constructive thought leadership and research in the pursuit of a sustainable built environment. And that's where you have to do all of those options analyses and think about all of the consequences and try to imagine what the unintended consequences are of those. So that's an absolute feature in policy development that we are part of, taking into account what's happening, say, even this year. We've got the national urban policy that's being developed. It will be influenced by the State of the Cities report that's being developed as well. Part of that will be exploring the consequences of a particular pursuit or a particular option. We've got the government or the federal government working on the national adaptation plan in terms of resilience building, informed by climate risk assessment. Again, all of those assessments and the mitigation activities have an impact. And so it's really trying to get the right balance of all of the different actions you can do and try and find a series of actions that aren't going to be cause devastation. It's a constant role and activity that we need to play when we're thinking about policy development. So it's not just, hey, there's a vision and this is what we need to do. There's a lot that goes in behind it. Hence why it can take quite a long time to develop policy, because these are all the conversations that are happening, all the research that's going on to try to get the right modelling, the right evidence to help inform decisions. So a lot goes into that policy.
And getting rid of policy?
Getting rid of policies. Hey, it happens. Sometimes that can be political as well. If I think about the National Urban Policy, the Urban Policy Forum was effectively recreated last year after a 10-year hiatus. We are standing on the shoulders of giants in relation to urban policy. There was a wonderful National Urban Policy Task Force. There were 50-odd signatories to a range of different actions, real champions for urban policy. And with the change of government, the funding was taken away from it. I know that ASBEC became a custodian of some of that information. So we look after, got the Urban Design Protocol website that we still look after, which was a result of all of that urban policy development. It could have just been lost, but we thought it was still quite relevant and practical for the community to access, for the public to access. That we kept it live. The retiring of policy can be political in nature, but then research changes, our understanding of everything changes. ASBEC was a supporter of Every Building Counts. The Every Building Counts website is a wonderful compendium of policy at the federal, state, territory, and local government levels on what needs to happen to create sustainable buildings. That was originally produced in 2019. We revised it last year, so 2023. We revised it because our knowledge has changed. Our understanding of the built environment has changed. When we know more, we need to change policy based on our understanding. So I think it's no point setting and forgetting in relation to policy, because we are forever understanding more. We are forever experiencing new things. Think about the pandemic that happened to cities. it really shifted our understanding of, even about the importance of greening in urban environments and how that affects mental health and well-being. So important. And it took a pandemic for that to be understood through the whole populace. And I truly can see where those understandings have contributed to change in policy. So I think policy is one of those things that it's constant evolution with the vision in mind.
That's reassuring that you say that we learn from the past and understand research and get new information and then we change our policies, because from the outside, it doesn't really look like that. And it's good to hear that even though it doesn't look like it, it happens.
Yes. And I think I wonderfully have the benefit of seeing behind closed doors all those machinations that happen. Rest assured, there's a lot of thought and a lot of work that goes into the reimagining of policy. But again, it does take a long time. And unless you're involved in it like I am, it's so very easy to say government's doing nothing. Because really, policy is only shown to the community at the very end when everyone has ticked every box, and it takes a lot of time to get to that finished product. Sometimes it could be years, and in those years, people don't see much. What is it? The duck swimming on water. So you can see the duck gliding along. The legs are working madly to try and make that happen.
Which is just an amazing picture for the government.
The government duck.
Moving on, are the three biggest fears or concerns regarding the future of cities for you?
I think if we are evolving our policies, like we talked before, if our policies have unintended consequences that really exacerbate that equity problem. So I think we don't want policy for cities that will just result in more of a gap between the haves and have-nots. So we really need to tackle that just transition. We need to tackle housing and affordability, all of those things. I think that's my fear if we don't get it right. So it's very challenging. And I know, again, the role of cities have such an important role to play because we need to become denser. We need to potentially shift our Australian cultural attitudes around home ownership, what that means, and even our role as humanity in the urban environment and our responsibilities towards each other, considering that real social lens. I think accessibility is really important, and we can't have denser cities that don't meet the needs of those that are disadvantaged, that require greater access, not only for people with disabilities, but we're going to have aging populations. So if our cities aren't designed to accommodate that, we're really going in the wrong direction. Potentially that cities can evolve organically and just result in worse outcomes for people. So I think the vision needs to be really important in the planning. And I think we need to, some of our Australian cities, we need to be a lot more assertive in our vision of what we need to. And that can often be the vision of the public benefit over personal gain. And that's hard. That's very hard as well. Achieving that balance is really important. My last fear is probably related to our decarbonisation needs. We need to really supercharge that. We need to have cities that are climate ready. They are resilient. They don't use fossil fuels. The vision of the circular economy is there, and that's the ultimate goal. But we need to have cities that really don't impact the natural environment in the way that they're doing right now.
I really love that. Although you described the fears, you already described the solutions or the potential steps we could take. What are the three biggest opportunities regarding the future of cities for you?
I think before we talked about, say, our learnings from the pandemic, for me, I think looking at cities not just as a collection of buildings and infrastructure, but looking at it in the holistic way of it's an organism, it's an ecosystem, reliant on the natural environment. So for me, having a city as that integrated urban environment that includes green, includes sensible ways of capturing water and using water, I think it needs to really be integrated. And that only works if we are collaborating and not looking at different aspects in silos. We need to really, now more than ever, understand that collaboration is the key. That's collaboration between all levels of governments, because if you think about a city, it's not just the local government responsible for the city. What happens in terms of state policy or territory policy has an impact. What happens in terms of federal policy has an impact. That's from a government point of view, but even in a component space, we cannot think of a building as just the building and look at it in that way. We need to think about the building in its place and what that means for First Nations, what that means for the environment around it, what means for the community that it's trying to encourage. It's so important to get the balance. And I think the way we're going in relation to urban policy as that umbrella, I think that's really important, and feeding all of our systems in. So the planning, the building, the infrastructure, the health, the social, all of that, it needs to be integrated together. And probably the last opportunity is resilience, because if we think about it, as much as we're focusing on a lot of mitigation activities, we as humans have had an impact on the global climate. So what are we doing? Noting that the frequency and intensity of various natural hazards are going to increase. What are we going to do to ensure our communities are safe, our communities are healthy, our communities thrive socially?
Regarding cities as organisms, Adrian McGregor talked about the biourbanism concept in episode 190. So if you are looking for something like that, please check out that episode. And I would love to understand, what do you think is the biggest hurdle towards this kind of collaboration you were describing, that everybody does their own roles and responsibilities, everybody is doing their job towards this holistic, better approach towards this vision?
I think the biggest hurdle is that our systems are still very siloed in structure. And I feel like it is my responsibility, along with many in my network, to try to break down those barriers. I feel sometimes like a broken record. Sometimes I'm talking with bureaucrats and I'm letting them know what other departments in their same government are doing. So the silos exist so inherently, and we need to break down barriers. I am lucky to see the scope of amazing stuff that's happening for a positive, beautiful, sustainable built environment. But I think people don't talk, and we naturally keep in our communities, we naturally keep in our own organizations and focus on what we're doing and doing it really well. It's my role to let everyone know what's happening and try to avoid that duplication. So it's a constant battle, and it's a battle. That's why I'm here.
I'm glad you are here and doing this battle. What are the three biggest strengths regarding the future of cities for you?
I think the time is absolutely right to embed what we know right now into our various planning instruments, especially now, even this year, with the development of the National Urban Policy. I think the opportunity is to, number one, contribute to that national urban policy development with the idea that national vision can then be used to inform what we're doing with all of our different cities and hubs and centres. I think it's really important to have that vision as a collective, rather than sometimes, again, even a city might be hell-bent on getting its own vision articulated and then implemented. But having that national understanding of what we really need to strive for, I think, is really important. And this year is such an exciting opportunity to get that done. So that's probably the first one. And then I think having sustainability and even our climate change and emissions reduction commitments as being the catalyst and the enabler for a lot of action that might not have happened in the past. I think we have moved beyond the peak now of us as a sustainable built environment organization trying to convince politicians that they need to act. I think that's absolutely recognized now across all levels of government. That's recognized across all businesses and the corporate world. We know that we need to act. And now all we need to do is try to figure out the best way to act. So that's an amazing opportunity again to have sustainability as a catalyst to really drive change with the best scenarios for the world and the natural environment at front of mind. The last would probably be that values and cultural shift, and it's towards that circular way of thinking. And for me, if it's a cultural shift, it's the opportunities for collaboration, and we have to collaborate now more than ever. And I know so many wonderful people repeat the same phrase, and it's circular economy is a team sport. That's so true. And we all need to get together. It's the business community. It's the not-for-profit community. It's the communities themselves. It's First Nations. It's everyone. It's nature as their very big stakeholder themselves. Everyone having a voice in shaping what we need as a vision for cities.
I really like this optimistic view on our current situation that the time is right. We have the catalysts and people seeing the change, and they are also working towards it because this is the time to do it. It's amazing. You sound very optimistic. Are you optimistic about the future of cities and future of humanity?
I need to be. That's simple. I just need to be, because when I'm talking with so many different stakeholders across so many different levels, whether it be government, whether it be the community, whether it be industry, you need to be able to sell the vision. And I believe in the vision. I know how the sausage is made in terms of the regulatory function. So understanding how the sausage is made and trying to get those right interventions to actually make change happen, I think it's really important. So again, I think I have a responsibility to be optimistic, because we need to have such a clear vision of what we need to achieve, and that can then influence all of the steps that we need to take to make that dream a reality.
I appreciate you taking on this responsibility to be optimistic. Which brings me to almost the last question, although I could ask you for hours, to be honest. What is your role in establishing the future of cities?
If we just look at currently, I think my role as representing ASBEC on the Urban Policy Forum is really important, providing that consensus industry voice into the development of the cities report and of the national urban policy framework as a whole this year. I think that's absolutely important. Part of that role is, if you think about the beautiful ASBEC membership, the organizations that are part of the council, they're all key leaders in this space. We've got planners, we've got housing, we've got builders, we've got urban green infrastructure, we've got water sensitive urban design. We have everything to do with buildings and infrastructure. And having those difficult conversations right now, so that we can then bring the outcome of those conversations and those difficult and challenging conversations and then provide that to government, I think that's really important. Historically, though, ASBEC's been around for 20 years and we have an incredible history of work on cities. We've had a long-standing focus on cities, infrastructure, urban scale policy, all with that vision of a sustainable, livable, productive, resilient built environment. And over the years, we've developed a whole range of different publications, research, policy papers on this subject. Many of those are out of date, wonderfully, because our knowledge and understanding has been enhanced and added to over the years. Some of those policies have gone on to inform really pivotal pieces of government policy, whether it's via the National Construction Code or whether that's via the work of Infrastructure Australia. and all of their amazing stuff in relation to that national view on settlements and urban infrastructure in the base. I'm very proud of ASBEC's output in relation to influencing the future of city, and really excited to see what role we play in the future.
And it's really amazing to see and hear your approach and progress and influence on a better future for our city. So thank you very much for your work. Again, I could ask you for hours about resilience, systemic problems and policymaking. But as a last question, because I want to be respectful of your time, do you have any closing comments or requests for the audience?
Maybe going back to the conversation we had about potentially people being a little bit dejected about any sort of action or change happening, know that there's so much happening and everything everywhere all at once. It's policy in relation to climate. It's policy in relation to what are we doing about a circular economy. It's conversations about nature and nature-related impacts for every single business. So much going on. If you're interested in and passionate, find out, because the information is out there and there's so many opportunities for you to have your voice and really contribute to that beautiful national vision.
Thank you so much, Alison.
Thank you, Fanny. Appreciate it.
It was really interesting to hear from Alison about industry and government responsibilities in establishing the future of cities, not to mention her highlight of the circular approach. Nico Garofano talked about the circular economy in detail in episode 171. You can find out more about Alison online, or the links are in the show notes. What was the most interesting part for you? What questions did arise regarding Alison's approach to the future of cities? What have you learned from this interview? Let me know on Twitter at WTF4Cities or on the WTF4Cities.com website, where the transcripts and the show notes are available. You can also subscribe on the website not to miss any new episodes and leave some feedback. I hope this was an interesting interview for you as well, and thanks for tuning in.
What is the Future for Cities podcast?